Blog Talk Radio.
Well, a very sad day today. On the 18th of June, there's a massacre in a church. If you haven't heard about this, it's going to be all over the news, or already is all over the news. South Carolina church shooting in which nine parishioners perished. And so got some information about that, but it's they say may have been racially motivated. I believe it was nine black members of this church were shot by a white person. So it's a very kind of a weird story. And they're still trying to gather what happened, what motivated it. It's at a historic, what they're calling a historic black church in South Carolina. And I've got a little clip on that here for you from ABC. All right, and so the guy's got a weird, the picture of this guy, he's got a weird haircut, kind of a bowl cut on his hair. So it was at the Emmanuel AME Church on Calhoun Street there in Charleston, and weird. I haven't heard anything like this. I mean, most of these shootings are a little bit more, I guess, a little bit more random. But anyway, just looking at some of the pictures of this, and okay, so I've got another clip here for you. But really, kind of wonder what would motivate something like that. 523-1450 AM Las Cruces here on 1450 KOBE. The storm Bill has plowed through, basically kind of made it through Texas for the most part, heading in towards the East Coast, kind of swinging. It's going up through some of the Midwest states, and it'll be over to the coast fairly soon. But it's still packing a lot of water, and there's a lot of flooding in Texas as a result, of course. And I'll have a few clips on that for you in just a moment. I've got a few guests on the show today, and La Casa's coming in. And we've got also, I asked the bail bondsman if they wanted to come in to kind of give an up on what's going on for the situation with bail and bond. And I know they've been on before, but I just thought I'd give an update. It is kind of strange, this situation with the bond has made it difficult to get people out over the weekend. But here is a little bit more on, actually, I think that, well, it's might be the same clip, but let's see here. Yeah, I think this is the same clip. So anyway, hate crime, it's not hard to imagine that they believe that it's a hate crime. It's a white guy goes into a black church during a prayer meeting and kills nine people. But, you know, you really have to wonder what the motivation of this was. And I'll continue to look for news on this. And there's a bomb threat at the scene. And what they're calling an extremely dangerous shooter being sought. I mean, that goes without saying, of course. I mean, somebody kills nine people, of course, the person's extremely dangerous. But anyway, it's just, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like the racial tension in this country right now is so high. Looking for any other details for you. Wednesday night. The shooter attended the church for an hour before the deadly shooting erupted, and they were not sure. It's a dark colored car that the guy is driving, but they're not sure what the make is and model. The authorities are all over this, including the FBI. And here is another clip for you. This is from the Associated Press. In just a second here. All right, so some of the other information on this that I have, that the church's pastor was among those killed. State Senator Clementa Pinckney, a married father of two, who was elected to the state house at the age of 23, making him the youngest member. And so here is NAACP president and CEO Cornell William Brooks said, "There is no greater coward than a criminal who enters a house of God and slaughters innocent people." Boy, holy cow. All right, so I'll keep you posted on any breaking news on that. I've got some on information on the storm that's swept through Bill, which swept through the Texas area. So anyway, we'll take a break right here. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and we will be back. You know, funny enough, I ran into a pastor last night and started talking to him, and he was talking to me about, of all things, demons. And I asked him if he wanted to come on the show and give his take on that. And so he's going to do that on Monday. So maybe there's a connection between this character. You ever think that, you know, some of the things that happen are so evil that there has to be kind of some sort of a divine presence of something even more sinister? Hitler, Chairman Mao, all these people had to have had a little kind of help from the devil or whatever. Anyway, 6:16, and we'll be right back. 523-1450 to call in. Not yet. Where are you? Supposed to be here at 6:30. Well, no, I mean, I'm running the show right now. I mean, I just assume. I mean, look, man, if people don't show up, I continue the show, but I'm assuming it's coming in. But I got to go. Come on over. It's 6:19, 6:20, basically, and here's just a little bit of news on these storms that have come up. I've got from AccuWeather forecasting that the storms are basically kind of going across the center of the country from about the top of Colorado all the way over. For Father's Day, that's what it's going to look like. But let me get you a clip here. And we did get quite a bit of rain in Texas, but we may have skipped avoided the worst of it. All right, and I think there is still some rain around the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Here's a little bit more from Weather Channel. And what the situation was, as you know, if you've been listening to the show or watching the news from Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas-Fort Worth, flooding. Because there was so much water in the ground already and the lakes and the rivers were at flood capacity already from the storm three weeks ago. And in some of these areas, 15, 20 inches of rain in the last 3 weeks. So here's one more clip for you. All right, so anyway, we're clear for the most part now. We've got last night a pretty heavy rain shower that came through where I was at, and there was a flash flood alert that had come up on my phone, and I don't know exactly how much was last night, but it yesterday afternoon and into the evening was pretty heavy, but I think it's kind of cleared out. Okay, so anyway, Here is Andrew Orvidal. A little bit of stand-up for you. I've got La Casa's coming in the second hour. I believe that I've got Ben Rossin calling in at 7:05 to talk about the county. La Casa after that. Before that, we've got a couple of bail bonds brothers in theory coming in, Moose and Dario Gomez coming in to give a little status update on what's going on with the bail bonds and the bond issues in town. And all right, so 6:24, this is AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. Hey, good. I was wondering, is there any chance that Steve would or could call in for a little bit, just a brief statement about getting kicked off that committee? I think it's fantastic. If not, I understand, but it just came out on the news. Mm-hmm. even 5 minutes if you want, man. But it's I mean, if he's overbooked, he's overbooked. I'm on the air, so I gotta go. I'm on the air. I'm on the air. It's Kelly, and I've got trying to get Steve Pierce to call into the show to talk about getting kicked off this committee, which I think is a very fantastic way to celebrate being a conservative. I don't know about you, but I'm really extremely I'm over this idea of, you know, with. I mean, I really don't get the value in coming up with a law that nobody knows the details to, that we have to pass so that we can then find out what's in it. I understand that if you're into the tyranny thing like Nancy Pelosi, that you want to do that. I don't understand why the Republican so-called leadership would want to do that. I think that's outrageous. It's an insult. What could possibly be in this bill that you couldn't tell people about? That's retarded, you know, with all due respect. I don't get it, you know. And I think that you know, he ought to be ashamed of himself. Who was the guy that ran for vice president, you know, supposed to be a conservative? Ryan and the rest of these people. I understand McConnell's not as conservative, but you know, Mr. Kind of middle of the road. But I just don't get the value in trying to get people to sign off on things that I don't know. It's just I honestly find it very disheartening that the Republicans run on all this stuff that they're supposedly going to do, and then when they first chance that they get, they immediately jump on something like Obama trade, which gives these big powers to the president, which we don't even know what they are, and so these people ran on getting rid of Obamacare and pushing back on immigration and stuff. And I don't get why not only don't appear to be working on this stuff, but they have to turn around and, you know, I mean, it's crazy the days that we're living in. Why does it seem like nobody who goes to Washington, D.C. is capable of understanding these very simple conservative principles like tell me what's in the bill before it's voted on, you know? I mean, is that so hard? What are these people being offered? I mean, are they meeting in the middle of at midnight on, you know, at a crossroads with Satan or something? Seriously, I don't get it. 523-1450 if you have some insight on this stuff. Absolutely crazy. And so you heard the statement that they go into this room. You can't have a camera with you. Can't have your phone. You can take notes, but the notes have to stay behind with the security guard. What is this? You know? I mean, it's just like living in a cult all of a sudden. 523-1450. I was trying to read through the bill last night to find out what was in it so that we could have a little bit more information on it. And I'm sure that Steve knows what's in there, but I guess Steve is too busy to call in. Here's a blast from the past. All right, so I just never thought I'd hear this from the right. And also, there are people on the right, Ryan, saying that we've got to have him pass it. But I'm multitasking a little bit here to see if there's any. This is just crazy. I mean, what is the purpose of having two parties if the two parties agree on everything? And if all of the ideas in the two parties are absolutely ridiculous, I don't get it. I don't get it, but let's go to break here for just a second. Anyway, here's the question. See, I'm sure if you're Mike, the answer to the question is it's part of the synagogue of Satan. But what is in the bill? What is in the bill that is so it is so toxic, or it is so explosive that you can't even know what's in it? You can't get a picture of it. There has to be something crazy. And here's the claim that I've heard. The claim is that it's got something that hands over sovereignty. Sovereignty is control of your country. It hands over sovereignty to an international body, such that we're handing away the control of certain areas of the law to these international bodies, which sounds like something out of 1984, but apparently that's what's in it. 6:35 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell here, 523, 1450, and we'll be right back. It's Kelly here, and I just got word that Moose Gomez is not going to be able to make it here. He's stuck down at the jail. I've got a little clip on this this trade bill, though, this mysterious trade bill that not only do people not really know what's in it, but the room that it's in, and I've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Tom.
Hey, yeah, what's up?
Did you hear about Obama's wife going over to England and going into a Muslim school and telling the students there that she's just like them?
Yes.
I think she's gone really off the deep end, don't you?
I think she started off the deep end.
She's getting deeper.
She went over somewhere and told some other... she told the president's wife in France that it was awful being the first lady and what terrible things she had to go through. I thought that was crazy, but
a really hard life.
Well, I mean, I just think these people spend all their time feeling sorry for themselves instead of thinking of various ways to lead and inspire people to make a better country. They spend all their time talking about what a terrible place this is. I mean, if it's so bad, make it better. Don't do what you can to destroy it, you know, destroy our way of life over here, which is what I think is happening.
I do too. I've seen this coming with when the Republicans when they had that big landslide, and I knew that they weren't going to do anything once they got power. I knew they were going to fail us. It's a sinking feeling.
But, I mean, what are they – here's the thing. You're Paul Ryan. You've just run for the vice presidency. You almost got into the second highest office in the world. Now you're back in the House with a very powerful position. Why would you attempt to hand away sovereignty of the United States? What body is less corrupt – what international body is less corrupt than the United States? I don't get it.
It's true. Okay, I'll let you go, Kelly.
Thanks a lot, man. Have a good day. All right, folks. I've got a clip here. I'm let just Paul Ryan speak for himself, but I'm very disappointed. I'm glad he didn't get into office. This is the thing that happens. You've got your opposition, you know, in this case, the Democratic Party. They've got their ideas. They've expressed them. That's what they stand for. And you got to have two parties, right? You got to have ideas ping-ponging between the two parties. What's devastating is when you have a person go into office and then start representing the other party, the other party's ideas, because then there is no difference. There's no way to get better things to come out because they've already capitulated. And if you think about it, that's a disaster for the whole country, not just for the GOP. I think we're losing the true believers, the people that really believe in the elements of liberty. And I think it's sad. But here's Paul Ryan to blab about his bill. So you're telling me that you want, this is Paul Ryan wants people to understand what's in the trade agreements before they're voted on. But we can't see the agreement that underlies this. That's absurd, right? I mean, there's got to be something sinister in this, or they wouldn't be hiding it. All right, so I think you get the gist of that. I don't at all trust this gentleman, Mr. Ryan. We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Mike.
Yeah, Mac, let's hear the latest conspiracy.
Well, I think the only thing that needs to be fast-tracked is Obama's removal from the Oval Office.
Not going to happen, so we need Plan B. I find it heartbreaking. There are years of conservatives and, Republican complaint and hand-wringing and claims that it's the end of the world and America's getting destroyed. They get into power. What do? They immediately start doing the same thing. It's just crazy.
Because they're double-minded.
Synagogue of Satan.
Kelly, the double-headed eagle, Masonic. Is Ryan a Mormon? You know,
I don't think he is. I think he's Catholic. I'll do some research for you. But why would you say he was Mormon? Oh, because he was the vice president for Romney.
Right. And I think it's like a big club.
Between them, they have 14 wives. But kidding.
Kelly, I think it's like George Carlin says. It's a big club, and you and I don't belong to it.
Exactly. Well, thanks a lot, Mike. Thanks for the call. Have a good day. All right. I guarantee you, Ryan is not a Mormon, but all right. So a little dedication for Bruce Jenner, Chaka Khan. I'm every woman. Anyway, it's 6:46. This is AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 5:23, 1450. I got Ben Rossin coming in at the next hour and La Casa. Be right back. We're going to continue on with this stupid subject. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, good morning. This is Bill.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I have a question to pose. If this is such a great bill and is going to do wonders for our economy, how come it has to have a companion bill to pass with it to retrain the workers that are going to be thrown out of a job?
I don't know. You want to ask that on the air?
Yeah.
Hold on. I'll put you on hold. Hold on.
KOBE, there's no better place to be.
I've got a call from Bill, and Bill, you've got a question to post for the listeners. What is it?
Yeah, if this is supposed to be such a great trade bill and is going to do wonders for our economy, then why does it have to have a companion bill that goes along with it to retrain the American workers that are going to be put out of a job?
Good question.
Now today, apparently, they're going to re-vote on this thing, and they're going to try to eliminate that part because that's the part that didn't pass. So I think that they're going to try to push this thing through no matter what. These people are working for somebody else. They're not working for us anymore.
I'd like to know the last time they were working for us, but thanks for the call, Bill. Have a good day. All right, folks, just try to squeeze a little bit more in here. I believe that Ben Rossin's going to be here in a few minutes, but I think I can squeeze in two clips here they'll be informative. This is a clip called What is the TPP Trans-Pacific Partnership, for a little background info for you. All right, so that's a little bit of background for you on that, and I think we have time for one more clip here from Western Journalism. This is a little more conservative. We got a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Sorry if I missed your call. Check this out.
A day after an embarrassing...
Well, we've got this call. Thanks for the call. All right, so if you're going to call, stay on the phone.
In defeat for President Obama's trade agenda, the Senate leaders have reached an agreement for senators to vote on two of their trade priorities as standalone bills before beginning debate on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The president of the AFL-CIO, Richard Trumka, said the TPP will hurt our economy.
This is a bad bill. This will hurt our economy. This will hurt our communities. It'll hurt our country. And it shouldn't be done in a fast-track manner where you only get to vote it up or down after it was negotiated in secret.
Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions is one of the few members of Congress who's actually read and studied the secretive text in a secure room without being able to bring in staffers or take any notes.
Breitbart is reporting that only two admit they've even read this trade agreement. That's like a dereliction of duty in my mind, Senator.
Don't read the bill. We'll tell you what all the things that you want are in it, but when you read it, it's not there.
President Obama was promoting the Trans-Pacific Partnership at the Nike shoe factory in Oregon. If TPP is approved, Nike says it will be able to manufacture more shoes in the U.S.
So the Trans-Pacific Partnership that we're working on, it's the highest standard, most progressive trade deal in history.
Here are some tweets. Nike perfectly depicts the job loss, low-wage future for Americans under TPP. This tweet compares NAFTA to the TPP, noting that Nike is the main proponent of TPP. This tweet compares New Balance shoes that are made in Maine versus Nike shoes, which are predominantly made in Vietnam. Fast-tracking Obama trade will give trade deals an expedited process with no amendments or filibusters by Congress for 6 years. Why should we trust Obama to rewrite international agreements without congressional approval?
That's a good question. Now, here's one more from CNN. Will Obama's trade deal benefit American workers?
Not American-made products. This trade deal, the president thinks he's going to get it done. He wants to get it done. But there's resistance even among Democrats who say, we are not convinced that these trade deals help the middle-class manufacturing worker in America.
First of all, if you look at our desire to have trade agreements in the Asia-Pacific region. Why do we need that? We're going to see unprecedented growth in the middle class in the Asia-Pacific, from 570 million middle class to 3.2 billion in just the next 15 years.
And they're going to buy American-made products.
And I have been across that marketplace, and they want American-made products. Our companies want to make those products here in America. The second thing to keep in mind is these trade agreements set labor standards for our trading partners. Minimum wage, safe workplace, no forced labor.
A critic would say we have not done well over the past 20 years in enforcing those.
But this is different. For the first time, labor standards are enforceable within these trade agreements. And resources are being set aside to increase the amount of enforcement that we're doing. By raising labor standards for our trading partners, we're making the American worker more competitive globally.
For a lot of the American public, they don't feel better about the living standard of the American middle class, middle wage worker. You know, wages aren't going up. We have an income inequality, still something we talk about every day. They hear another trade deal, and they're just not convinced.
We can't close ourselves off to other markets as a solution for the middle class income challenge that we face. We have to, in fact, embrace those markets and embrace globalization, because the status quo is not going to be sustainable. And what the president is saying is, let's make sure that we have access to markets. Let's make sure that our workers are playing on a level playing field. But also then let's address the minimum wage.
Right.
Let's be taking other actions that can expand the pie for the middle class.
All right. So I would say the main problem with this trade agreement is, number one, they're hiding what's really in it. And number two, that the president has lost a lot of credibility by misleading the American people on Obamacare and other things. And now the GOP has allowed itself to get dragged into a secret negotiation. It looks and smells terrible. I'm totally opposed to any secret deals. Anyway, we'll take a break on the hour, and Ben Rossin will be here, and we'll be right back. This is a directional mic. So most people don't like things in their face. Right? But if a directional mic picks up something right in front of it, so you have to talk like this. If you don't, if you talk like this, you can use about 50%. And so, So, man, there's a lot to happen since you're last in the studio. Too many notes to make, man. Yeah, I'll let you, I'll just follow your lead, because I know you got some other stuff. I got a little dedication from Bruce Jenner here. Oh, I'm sorry. So, what's so, there's so much stuff going on, and I had Jess in yesterday. Did you hear that? And, but he couldn't, Jess is the county, he's the representative, he's the voice of the county. So, you guys know about the scam that happened down at the county building, but they're the kind of clerk. That's just one layer. No, that's a good way to. That's a good way to. We're helping with Jet. This is the only way we can get new jobs. Well, it's Kelly here at 7:06. Of course, it's sixth month. It's June the 18th, 2015. I got my old buddy Ben Rawson here, and we got a lot going on. But we finally found a way to create jobs in Dona Ana County, Ben. And unfortunately, it's through arresting half of the county clerk's office. That's the bad news. The good news is there's more jobs.
That would be bad news, Kelly. That's not the way we want to create jobs here in Doñana County, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, but it's a start anyway. So what's going on, man? It's been a little while since the people have been dying. The sheep have been calling out for the Rawson Report.
Well, I don't know about that, Kelly, but I do try and provide a little bit of information for your listeners and a little bit of insight to what's going on at the county level. I've got a couple things to cover. One of the ones, we've got a county commission meeting coming up on Tuesday at 9 o'clock at the county building, and one of the items on that agenda is particularly of interest to my district, which is the Baylor Canyon Road Project. And for those of your listeners who may not be aware, Kelly, it's funding to pave the unpaved portion of Dripping Springs in Baylor Canyon, and it's been a pretty controversial project. So,
what made it so controversial? They just don't want more development out there. The people that live out there, or is it the green people?
You know, Kelly, it's been kind of surprising to see who ends up on different sides of this deal. But there are people that want to see it paved because it's important for them to be able to get, if they live in Talavera, to get over to Highway 70 type of area. So we see a good contingent there. We see people, I'm trying to think what other reasons people want it. It's a second access point for those people that live in the Talavera area. They only have one way in and out of their community, and that's through Dripping Springs and University. So this would allow a second access point. The sheriff has come out in favor of it because it allows him quicker response times to be able to get his units over there. So those are kind of some of the reasons for. Some of the reasons against, Kelly, is the development. This area of the county has been largely untouched, and there's a lot of people that would like to see it stay that way.
Yeah,
I would say another reason for that I've heard is with the new national monument, we need people to be able to get there and to enjoy the national monument. So that's been another reason for. But against concerns about traffic and what that's going to do, this will be a long stretch of road, and it'll need to be monitored by the sheriff's deputies for speeding and other kinds of activity out there. And there's that concern out there as well.
Okay, so is it going to get paved?
Kelly, that's a good question. I don't know. A lot of that will depend on what happens on Tuesday at the county commission meeting, and so I'm sure that individuals that are interested will want to contact me ahead of time or come to the county commission meeting and have their say there.
Okay, all right. So now, next topic.
Next topic. I'll jump right over. While we're talking about that area, real quick, I'll mention the Verizon Tower that we've talked about over in the Talavera Fire Station. We've gotten approval on that. We should hopefully have a contract signed by Verizon before the end of tomorrow. And so then they'll be able to begin construction pretty quick. So
fantastic.
Just a tiny update there.
Fantastic. Appreciate you working on that one.
Then, Kelly, we had a very long meeting at last night's ETZ, which is a zoning authority meeting, specifically dealing with the A Mountain case. And that's been a topic of a lot of conflict for about just over 2 years now, dealing with a parcel of land that's at the bottom of A Mountain and the owners of that land wanting to put commercial property there, and many of the residents wanting it to stay as some sort of a conservation, don't ever do anything to the land. And
yeah,
so
yeah.
That finally is resolved as far as the county commission goes. It was voted to zone it as industrial.
Okay, good.
And so it'll stay
as
industrial.
What we need there is a factory, like to build tires or whatever.
Well, Kelly, I did vote against it. It passed on 4-1, and I don't think industrial zoning is the right zoning for there.
So what does that leave it open to?
Primarily a rock quarry.
Oh, okay.
Which is what's on the other side of the road there. And so that's likely what will stay. The nice thing is this has been going on for over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the property owners needed to know what they could do with the land. So from that standpoint, I'm glad that this is finally closed.
Okay. Next.
Next, you probably have already covered the capital outlay bill that the governor came down and signed yesterday. She signed that here in Santa Teresa. We're getting $8.33 million for Airport Road, Industrial Road, and a little bit of work on Pete Domenici Highway there. So getting those three funded is really critical. We'll have to make sure that we get moving on that quickly. Santa Teresa is a booming area here, Kelly. And, you know, the nice thing is that's where we're getting a lot of jobs is down in Santa Teresa. And so it's important that we keep that momentum going. We've got to keep the roads built.
That in the county clerk's office.
That in the county clerk's office. Oh, boy, I don't really know what to say about the county clerk's office. That definitely has been a topic of concern. Yesterday, two of the individuals that were arrested did have their court hearing, and so or arraignment. I forget the exact word. You're better on that.
The introduction to court, the arraignment.
So they had that yesterday, and I hope justice is done. You know, it's a real concern when you have individuals in the clerk's office that are taking out identity out red voter registration cards that have Social Security numbers on them. They have full names, addresses, date of birth, everything you need for identity theft. You know, you hear a lot about Target or these other companies that have had identity theft problems, but you're dealing there with a credit card and a name, and that's all that's stolen there. What we're dealing with here is a lot worse than that because you have full Social Security numbers, you have addresses, everything that's been date of birth that's been stolen. So these are much more valuable identities that have been stolen.
All right. Now, do we know if more than half of the team at the county clerk's office is now in stripes? Is that right?
Of the Bureau of Elections.
And they're not playing for the Yankees. Is that correct?
No, no, unfortunately.
No. Okay. I mean, what are your feelings? What is your reaction? You're not just a county commissioner. You're also a lifelong resident here with deep roots. And I know your father was in the office as well. What's your reaction?
You know, Kelly, as soon as I got my briefing on it, the first thing I did was I got identity theft insurance. And I would encourage all residents of Doniana County or all registered voters of Doniana County, they ought to consider that. For me, it was I tacked it onto my homeowner's insurance, and it was only $15. So not real expensive. I think it's something that everyone should look into. But, you know, Kelly, it's a real concern when you have individuals that you're trusting to run elections fairly, that you're trusting to handle very confidential information, and they're selling that information.
They're selling it, yeah.
And so that's the concern. Now, what should be done about it? You know, of course, there's a big push by the clerk's office that Lynn Ellens and Scott Kraling had nothing to do with it, didn't know anything about it.
Well, like, apparently they were too busy playing canasta or pinochle in the back to be involved with it.
You know, when you've got something that's been going on for as long as this has and involves that many employees, I think they should have known. You know, it's difficult to say because it's hard to know, but the buck stops at the top, and they have a responsibility to have that information secure.
Well, I mean, some people have said, and I don't know if you can comment on this, but that Lynn Ellens doesn't show up a lot. I don't know if that's true, but it's been said many times.
You know, Kelly, I couldn't really comment on that. I'm not at the county building every day. I'm there on Tuesdays and usually another day throughout the week. So I'm not there often enough to evaluate his attendance. But
is there a stuffed figure in his seat?
Well, I haven't seen that, that's for sure. But, you know, we've got really what I think the county needs to do about this, Kelly, and we're going to discuss this on Tuesday as well, is the county commission has funded an internal auditor position.
Okay.
And that position, the county manager has decided not to to hire and has replaced that individual with a grants administrator. And I think that's a problem. I think that we need an internal auditor that can go in and look at what kind of IT controls do we have in place? What kind of checks and balances do we have to make sure that that information like this is safe? And so I'll be fighting very hard for that on Tuesday to make sure we get that internal auditor and risk manager back in. That the county manager understands the county commission has already approved this, and she needs to fill those positions.
All right, so Lynn Ellens has how much more time in office?
He's got 2.5 years left in office.
That's a long time. Do you know if any prominent, have you heard of any prominent figures in the county asking him to step down?
You know, Kelly, I got to correct that. He has 1.5 years left.
Okay.
I'm trying to do math right on the spot. Apparently, I can't count very well. You know, there have been people that have called for him to resign. I think the Republican Party has come out with something that was, I'm trying to remember their exact wording, but, you know, it goes back to the buck stops.
Moving on.
The budget, that's the other one that's real key. We've had our final work session on the budget, and the next action on the budget will take place on July 27th. Or 28th, whatever that Tuesday is, where the county commission will vote on a final budget to approve or to not approve it. And I still have the same concerns that we've talked about a lot. The county commission implemented the largest tax increase in the history of Doñana County, $12.3 million in gross receipts tax increase, and promised that that the first $4 million of that was going to go to the sheriff's department, and that's still not happening.
All right. Now, when Jess Williams was in here, the way that he was talking, and I realize he's an actual spokesman for the county, but the way he talked about it was it could all be just a simple misunderstanding. That the money's not here yet, and therefore we don't need to worry about it. Of course, it can't be given to the sheriff doesn't have the money because nobody has the money because the money hasn't been brought in yet. And I said, well, that's true of all the money, so there's got to be more to it than that. And I said, I believe I pointed out that you were under the impression that there was something a little bit shady going on, the supplanting issue.
Yeah, Kelly, there's a lot more going on here, and I know you've had the sheriff on, and he's spoken to the issue as well. The concern is when the commission passes a resolution and says, this is what we're going to do with the tax increase money, and here is why the tax increase is so necessary. This is what we have to spend it on.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take care of the sheriff and the public safety.
Yeah.
And then after they do that for the press so that everyone understands, here's why we're giving you the largest tax increase in the history of Doñana County is because we have to take care of the sheriff, and then goes around the other way, and the sheriff's budget is pretty much flat. You know, Kelly, you look at county spending in 2007 was $95 million. The budget that we're going to be voting on is $154 million. In only, 8-9 years, county spending has increased by $60 million. That's not a sustainable rate. So I ask you, what has happened during that time period for the sheriff's office? The oldest numbers I have are from FY10, fiscal year 10.
Okay.
Fiscal year 10, the DASO budget line item was $17 million. Hmm. This year it's going to be $18 million. So in 4 years, the sheriff's department has gotten $1 million, while the rest of the county government has increased dramatically. And that's simply not appropriate. It sure isn't transparent, you know, when you talk about passing a legislation that says, here's how we're going to spend the money and not doing it. I think that's dead wrong.
Well, when I find it interesting, too, from what I understand, the Democratic Party is also opposed to the way that Golden Earring, Mr. Garrett, has been handling his duties as a member of the Democratic Party.
Interesting. Very interesting.
That they're also in favor of some support. You know, Kiki is a Democrat.
Yep.
They want the sheriff's office supported. They want vehicles. They want infrastructure. They want more pay for the deputies.
You know, Kelly, I think what we're seeing there a lot of is the traditional Democrats and the progressive Democrats and what they're doing to their party. And so you have the traditional Democrats like the sheriff, who are saying, no, the priority still has to be the traditional government responsibilities. And you have individuals like our chairman, Billy Garrett, who is wanting to go on a more progressive route and kind of ignore that stuff and let's focus on livability issues. And, you know, livability issues is all fine and dandy, but when you're at half staff on your sheriff's deputies, sure, you've got a problem.
Is it part of a hippie constitution?
I don't know about that guy.
Well, I mean, if you were the head of the county commission, what would you do?
If I was the head of the county commission, Kelly, first of all, I would have fought even harder not to pass this gross receipts tax. You know, the excuse for this tax is that we have the Hold Harmless legislation that's going away.
$100,000.
Yeah, $100,000, less than $10,000 a month. And in place of that $10,000 a month, Kelly, that they're lost and use that as an excuse, they put in this $12.3 million tax.
So they replace $10,000 with $1 million a month.
A month.
A month.
A hundredfold. And then, of course, you've seen the city is suing to stop that.
What do you think about that?
I hope they're successful, Kelly.
Folks, there's a lawsuit going on. I mentioned it on the show before, but Mayor Ken Miyagashima and others are suing to get rid of double and in some cases, apparently triple taxation. And this is a statewide lawsuit.
It is, Kelly. And what you have is the Hold Harmless has gone away. So the state gave municipalities and counties the opportunity to raise the gross receipts tax to make up for that. That's mm-hmm. what it was intended for, to make up for the money that was lost. So if there was a tax increase for $10,000 a month, I might not have had a problem with it, Kelly. But when you replace that tax 100-fold, I do have a problem with it. And that's a significant problem. So you say if I was in charge, what would have happened? We would have made a bigger stand on that and hopefully not approved that. And then going back to the sheriff's department, we'd make sure the sheriff's department was fully funded.
And, okay, so I know you got to run here. Was there anything else?
Kelly, I think those are the big items. I will put out my contact information if anyone wants to contact me on some of the items we've talked about. My cell phone number, Kelly, is 649-4153. That's 649-4153. And my email address, if anyone wants to send me an email, is brawson, R-A-W-S-O-N, @donyanacounty.org.
Ben, I want to thank you for standing up for the people of Donana County and keeping them informed. Any chance that we're going to have the Rawson Report appearing again?
We'll try and make that work, Kelly. Thank you for the opportunity.
Great to see you, Ben. It's always wonderful, and we'll look forward to is there going to be more of the team cleared out at the county clerk office?
Kelly, I don't think we've reached the end of what's going on in the clerk's office, and we'll just have to wait and see.
Sounds like the whole thing was a boiler room down there.
It comes back to priorities, and we got to make sure, even in the clerk's office, that we have the same priorities that our constituents expect us to have.
No doubt. Well, thanks for coming in, Ben. I know you're busy, and how's the baby?
Doing real well, and actually my next oldest daughter just turned 3 yesterday, and so that was real fun as well.
All right. Fantastic. Folks, Kelly O'Connell Show, 722 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. We will be right back, and we've got CASA, La Casa waiting in the wings here. So we're going to have a little report with them. /7:26, and going to be a scorcher today. Going to be up over 100 degrees. We've got La Casa here, but I've got some, and La Casa was kind enough to come in early this morning. We're going to talk to them in just a second. I just got a phone call. I was just given some information. We had the arraignment for the individuals who were arrested at the county clerk's office. You're not going to believe this. Feel free to draw your own conclusions. My jaw was left hanging a little bit, but you know who showed up and argued for a bond reduction? It was none other than Lynn Ellens. And the person who called me said, it's on the public record. Lynn Ellens showed up and argued for a bond reduction and of these employees that he didn't know were doing evil or doing wrong. And the person who told me that, it said, in their opinion, it was a highly unethical thing, and that they couldn't believe it. And so there's just another page to the this incredible story. Okay, so Lynn Ellen's DeGeneres, thanks for giving us more news. But anyway, we've got La Casa here, and good morning, Sarah Armijo and Josie Lopez.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Doing good, thank you.
Thanks for coming in. You got your purple shirts on.
We do. We got our purple La Casa Stand Up for Domestic Violence shirt.
Stand up against?
Oh, against domestic violence.
I think there's enough people standing up for it. But anyway, all right. So what is La Casa?
Well, La Casa is a nonprofit organization that offers comprehensive services to everyone, and that's including emergency shelter, in order to diminish domestic violence and abuse in all forms.
Okay. So La Casa is, it's a shelter. Is it for women?
It is for everyone, actually.
Okay.
I think that's kind of the misconception, that over the years La Casa has only been a shelter for women or for women and children, but they actually do offer their services to everyone.
Okay, cool. And how did you get involved? You're the AmeriCorps Vista.
Yeah, so through the New Mexico Coalition to End Homelessness, they placed me through AmeriCorps at La Casa to help them with their capacity building. So I assist them with their community outreach, fundraising, and event planning.
Okay, and so how long have you been here in the community?
I moved here. I met my husband here. I moved here in 2013, but I started with La Casa under this AmeriCorps Vista position in February.
All right. And so far, how has your what's your experience been like at La Casa?
It's been an incredible experience. It's a fantastic organization. I think they have a phenomenal board of directors who are really invested. They also have a group of women volunteers who is their funding guild, and I think that they're all very invested as well. The executive director works very hard to, you know, make sure we can find sustainable solutions for the future. And it's just been a real blessing to learn and to grow.
Okay, and who pays for La Casa?
La Casa is funded by grants, by the federal grants and state grants and local grants. And then there's also some other funding that they get from private donors. But they do need a lot of help with individual contributions.
Okay, and so you guys are in the middle of a fundraising drive?
That's correct. So at the beginning of May, the board of directors launched what they call the 1,100 campaign. And this campaign was an effort to minimize the deficit that La Casa will essentially be in at the end of June, our fiscal year. And it's been going really well. So since the beginning of May, we've raised $50,000, $427. So we're a little over half of our overall goal. And that is actually through a combination of personal donations and also businesses in the community who've stepped forward within the last month to raise money for us. And so we've been pretty amazed and grateful for the outpour of both individual and community support that we've received thus far.
All right. And let me just ask you this. So say a woman gets abused and she's directed to La Casa, what happens next?
She'll be intaken. If she comes to our shelter, she'll come to our office, and then she'll fill out an intake form, and she'll meet with a counselor, and they'll kind of go over some crisis intervention with that person.
Now, is La Casa have housing at all, or food, housing, that type of thing?
Yes. So our shelter can accommodate up to 80 people. Oftentimes, two-thirds of those are children with a parent. We also have a transitional housing program. So when people are ready to leave the shelter, they can go into our transitional housing program to get subsidies to try to find affordable living.
Mm-hmm. And is the shelter usually full?
It's usually pretty full.
Okay.
I know right now it's pretty full.
Yeah, I would assume so. And do you guys need are you planning on putting in more beds or more housing in the future?
You know, that's a really good question. I think right now La Casa really needs to just work on trying to get that sustainable and continuous community support and assistance in order for them to keep doing the life-saving and life-changing work that they do.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So talking to La Casa, we're going to come back and have a few words from Josie Lopez as well. This is AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 to call in, and we'll be be right back. Well, Kelly, and we're here with La Casa, and got Josie Lopez, who is the children's program advocate for La Casa.
Yes.
And how long have you been working at La Casa?
I've been there since September.
Oh, okay. And how's the job going?
I love it.
You love it?
I do. So I get to work with the children.
And what type of things do you do?
I'm there to give them activities to help them feel more comfortable and at ease during their transition.
What would be a typical amount of time that a kid might stay in La Casa?
It all depends, but the most would be 3 months.
They can only stay there for 3 months and then they have to find other housing?
Right, we help them.
Okay, and so it must be, I mean, La Casa must be kind of an intense place. I mean, that's where if somebody gets beat up at their house, then that's where they end up, right?
Okay.
I mean, if somebody gets beat up, you know, there's a domestic violence issue at their home, or somebody's being stalked or whatever, then they will a lot of times end up in La Casa, right?
Correct.
Okay. Sarah, let me ask you something. If people want to help with this fundraising, how would they get involved?
Well, they could get involved in a few different ways. If they would like more information, either about how to donate or how to get involved on fundraising, or even if they're looking to seek services, they can call our office at 526-2819. You can also go to our website, lacasainc.org, and there is more information about the various services we offer and also a place for you to donate. You can like us on Facebook as well and follow us on Twitter. These are all just efforts in us trying to get our name and our face out there in the community and let Las Cruces know that we are here.
Okay, and so if someone wanted to volunteer, is there room for volunteers?
Absolutely. We are always in need of volunteers on all different capacity levels, for special events, for just general administrative work, even in the shelter. We need volunteers with the children's program as well. So, I mean, lots of opportunities for internships and volunteers.
Okay, and how about like donating food and stuff like that?
Donating food can be kind of tricky, and we have grants that cover the food for our shelter, but we always are in need of cash donations first and foremost, clothing, toiletries as well, diapers, things like that. And right now we actually have a couple fundraisers going on in the community. The Ladies of Harley are doing donation boxes at the Burnett of Harley and at Los Mariachis. And so if anyone wanted to donate toiletries but couldn't come to our office, they could go to either one of those businesses and drop off donations at those boxes.
Okay. All right. And and you guys are working with the court as well? You guys work with the court?
Yes, we do. We do work with the court. We have what we call a batterer's intervention program. So what I think is really, really interesting and kind of unique about La Casa is that they don't just offer services for victims. They offer services for batterers as well. And so we have a 52-week program that's court-ordered oftentimes for these people to come to us with for counseling. And it's not really an anger management class. It's more of like an empowering, better understanding of what domestic violence is and trying to do some behavioral management.
And including a men's program.
That's what the batterers and the intervention program is. But it doesn't just suit for men. Mm-hmm. Women also can go to that program as well.
Okay. Well, we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Tom again. I was wondering how many clients do they deal with per year? Or is it are we into an epidemic how many people are involved in it? Domestic violence, and that's my question. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. All right. So, any idea how many people per year you would help?
We service anywhere between 800 to 2,000 people per year, and it is a growing epidemic across the world. Domestic violence is definitely a cultural epidemic that is affecting lots of people. Statistically, we use numbers like 1 in 3 women will experience some form of domestic violence in their lifetime. And for men, that can be anywhere between 1 in 5 or 1 in 7.
Mm-hmm.
So those are really staggering numbers. And keep in mind, these are just the people who've come forward and reported.
Right.
It's still a very underreported issue
mm-hmm.
that most people don't come forward and talk about.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming in talking about La Casa. And one more time, the contact information.
Yes. Our office phone number is 575-526-2819. And our website is lacasainc.org.
Thanks a lot, ladies.
Thank you.
All right, guys. So take a little break here. And it is 7:41. And I'm going to come back and talk about a few more issues. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB. And, okay, so just talk to La Casa. And just keep La Casa in mind if you ever are thinking about doing any donating or any charitable support, because, you know, I've seen it in my work. I don't know. It's just, you know, the worst of the worst situations can end up in La Casa. And you can imagine a man and a woman living together or it could be even a same-sex situation living together where there is violence, and that person who's been the victim may not have anywhere else to go. They may not really have friends or family, or they those people may not want to get involved because it's a family matter. But a lot, and as you heard, a lot of times it's kids too, and it is kind of heartbreaking. But La Casa does a lot of good work, and a lot of times people who are involved in the court system, some member of the family might end up in La Casa, and so it's a very worthwhile undertaking. And I will guarantee you that they need more than 80 beds out there as well. So anyway, okay, so we were talking about this this trade situation that I have to say that I find it very bizarre that the GOP claims that they have to feel like they have to hide the information in the bill to pass it. When I hear that, it sounds terrible. And our way of life, our Constitution, the Declaration, essentially demands transparency. And the reason that I say that is the Declaration says that unless government is done by the will of the people, that it is illegitimate, and that is grounds to replace it. And so I'm going to actually pull up the language of the Declaration just to remind you guys about this. We need to always remind ourselves of the magnificent documents that we have, and the way of life that it's allowed us to have, and we can never walk away from that. And especially anybody who's telling you, don't worry about the details. Just pass this bill and find out what's in it later. That's a terrible idea. And as you recall, the Declaration was written by Thomas Jefferson, and they say that when he wrote it, a great deal of it was off the top of his head. That it was, he had studied this stuff, and a lot of it was John Locke, the philosopher John Locke. But the upshot is that these were ideas that were debated over. They were studied on, essayed on, fought and died over, and we're in danger of losing this in our collective memory because we don't really celebrate and study our documents. So last night I was reading a book on the common law, and it was really fantastic, just kind of going over this. And so the point that the author made, and I can't remember right off hand who the author was, I'll get the information for you tomorrow. And he was saying that, you know, the common law, as opposed to statutory law, were kind of the Napoleonic style that was over the rest of Europe. The common law was developed in England and America. It had a unique taste to it, a unique blend, and it allowed this Bill of Rights to come out of it, and it became the foundation for the natural law, the common law, the foundation for the Declaration and the Constitution. And it talked about the local decision making, and that the law would adapt to the local community, and it was a great point, and I'll bring it in and read it to you a little bit. All right, here's a little bit out of the Declaration. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such forms as to them seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. But go back to that part where it says, to secure these these inalienable rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. You cannot possibly give consent to anything that you don't know what it is. So you, there's the idea of passing a bill and then finding out what's in it is not just illogical and nonsensical. It is not just anti-American. According to my reading of that right there, the declaration, it's illegal. Folks, 750, we'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. I don't want to go on the air, but and this is Susan. I was trying to research that TPP through the WikiLeaks.
Okay.
And the first thing that it says on there is that they have to agree that this document remains secret 4 years prior to it being initiated, and if it even if it isn't initiated, it still remains private 4 years after. That's as far as I got, and I thought, why do they even begin the document with that information?
You know, just look at the what has happened with Obamacare. It's just a total disaster, and it doesn't seem like there's any way to unwind it. Why would that be the model? And it's got to be something that's unacceptable that they force on people, that it becomes too late to change it.
Right. Now, on these trade agreements, I go back to NAFTA.
Hey, on the air. You're fine. We're talking fine here. Don't worry. We got about a minute left here, but come on the air.
Okay.
I think it's important to let people know that there are individuals out there that are actually doing some work to try to understand what's going on in the government.
All right, I'll call back.
No, stay on the phone.
Oh, just stay on the phone?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, hold on. We're almost out of time, and there's 1 minute left in this ad. But I appreciate you doing that. I've got the page open, WikiLeaks.org, press release, secret Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Is that where you went?
No, it's the actual document. WikiLeaks has can go to WikiLeaks and actually go to the document itself.
You've got to be kidding. I didn't even know it was out there.
Yes.
Oh, my God. So what are they trying to hide is the question.
Well, and that is the question. Unfortunately, I've got this smartphone, but I'm too dumb to operate it, and I don't know how to operate keeping that page open and trying to talk to you at the same time. I don't know how to do that.
No, it's all right. Just go. We've only got a couple. Hold on. We've only got a couple of minutes left anyway, so we can just kind of go off of. It's fine to go off your memory.
Okay.
Here, I see, though, it's got I've got it open right here, the draft text.
Yes.
It's crazy. We're on the air.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I was researching the WikiLeaks copy.
This is Kelly. And I've got Susan who's called in, and she said, you know, Susan called in and said, you know, there's an actual draft of this document that the people are not allowed to see. The draft of the document was in WikiLeaks, and I just popped it up. So anyway, tell us a little bit about what you found out, Susan.
Only because of time constraints, the opening statement says that this document has to remain secret 4 years prior to it being voted on, and if it is turned down, that it still has to remain secret for another 4 years. I didn't have the time to read what all is in. This is the trade portion of it. But it does bring to my mind the question of NAFTA. I recall that I remember kind of being in favor of NAFTA because I felt that other foreign countries had to have the ability to be able to trade. And as a result of it, I think we have seen all these other countries like India, Mexico, their economies did rise because of NAFTA. However, ours went down. So I'm questioning this new trade agreement.
Well, here's the thing, and we want to go back to the declaration. Folks, if we don't stick to our founding documents, we're going to get lost. We're going to get lost so fast, and that's the problem with America right now. We're not sticking to the original principles. The fact of the matter is we cannot support laws that are not clearly outlined before they're voted on. We cannot do that.
I absolutely agree with you, especially in view of what Obamacare has done to us. This has thrown us into such a tailspin. It is destroying our economy, our nation, just in civil conversation. We can't even discuss these things without people coming undone.
People flip out and, you know, you're against the president, you're racist or whatever. And it is, it's a terrible position to be in, to be treated like children. You don't, you know, don't worry about dinner. We'll feed you what's good for you. It's a terrible thing, but, we've got to demand that bill making is open. I mean, we don't have to be at every single every single conversation when the bills are created, but we need to know what the text of the bills are and how they plan to apply them before they're voted on, or it's just a complete travesty.
I agree. A representative government does not mean that they have the ultimate voice on this. The original intent was they went to Congress, they found out what was going on, then they came back and reported to the people, and the people had the final say. That is still the way it is,
Susan,
in the I understand it.
Yeah, of course it is, but let's just remember what we're talking about here. Nothing has changed. Since the creation of the world, human beings have had the same general nature, the same level of intelligence. Yes, our society has upgraded, and we've develop science and a lot of wonderful ideas, but it's all the same. These founding documents deal with the essential nature of human beings. The only way to protect ourselves is to have open government.
Exactly. Now, Kelly, can you tell us a little bit? Apparently, this thing is still going to be coming up for a vote again, and they're still going to have another shot at trying to pass this thing without our consent.
It's coming up today. Susan, we're running out of time here, so let's pick this up tomorrow, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Didn't mean to cut her off, but we're at 7:57 right now. All right. So there's going to be a vote on this today. And Nancy Pelosi turned her back on the president and walked away from it. Paul Ryan has sworn that this is going to be passed. And Mitch McConnell has sworn it's going to be passed. We got another call. This is Kelly. Thanks for calling in. Who's this?
I'm going to tell you what's a joke. You guys on the conservative side having Donald Trump running for president, anything else is really serious business. What do you think,
Frankie,
of that?
Frankie, I think for the, you know, this reminds me of Sarah Palin when people made fun of Sarah Palin. Like Sarah Palin, even if she tried, could be worse than President Obama. I mean, what a disaster. Donald Trump at least has business sense. But Hillary Clinton's supposed to be better than Trump? Are you freaking kidding me?
But let me tell you, I hope he wins.
Yeah,
I'm going to love it.
So do I.
John Stewart will be turning, or he'll be jumping up and down.
Listen, I hope when Hillary Clinton is finally sent away to an island like Napoleon, that you have to be her butler. Thanks for the call, Frank.
Not happening.
Okay, bye-bye. We're running out of time here, folks. Yeah, of course, Sarah Palin would have been a million times worse than Obama, right? Except there's not a million degrees worse than Obama available. All right, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Kelly O'Connell Show. We're going to come back and do it again tomorrow. Have a great day. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Ciao.